This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You are listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 203, sponsored by Iverse Comics, Audible.com, Discount Comic Book Service, and iFanboy listeners like you. iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 203. My name is Connor Q. Kilpatrick. It is not. And I'm here with J.A. Flanagan.
That's pretty much right.
And Ronald J. Richards II.
I didn't know your middle name, so.
Yes. You motherfucker. Yes, Josh knows my middle name. God.
Is it Seamus?
I know your middle initial. That's not the same thing. It is his Twitter address, Ron.
Oh, right. Oh, motherfucker.
It's almost every email I have, by the way.
It's not like it's a hidden thing.
All right, Observant. Then.
We are the Observant Fellows from iFanboy.com who like comic books. We read comic books, and every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us picks the one they liked the best or their best one, and they write about it on the website, and we talk about it on the podcast along with other topics of interest in the comic book realm. But before we get to the show, we like to
What?
I think we should add observant fellows to the permanent script, by the way. I would like to
observant fellows.
I'd like to add a gentility to the show, which we have previously lacked.
We do it like Southern gentlemen.
Continue, sir.
I say.
Let's remind you all before we get going that it is a review show. We don't like to ruin your comic book reading experience by spoiling the stories, so pause the show. Come back later after you're done reading. It'll be fun for you, less stressful for us when we get all the emails complaining.
Fun for the whole family.
What ho!
Ronald J. Richards II, you had the pick of the week.
I did have the pick of the week, and mother son of a rocker girl. That was the sound. That's the sound of frustration I had as I walked out of my comic book store. Because you see, I wasn't supposed to have the pick this week. I'm foolishly going on vacation. I will not be here next week. And so, to not screw up our scheduling, Josh and I swapped. Right. Josh was supposed to have the pick this week, and Josh was supposed to deal with the tidal wave of comic books that came out this week.
Big win! Ding ding ding! Go me.
I bought like 20 books. I didn't get home till like 8 o'clock. I was reading until like midnight. Oh god, it was miserable. But I loved every minute of it because there was so many good stuff. There was
a lot of good books this week.
A great week of comics. It was funny because normally I don't like to talk about what I'm reading during, you know, like I don't Twitter about it or I don't talk about while I'm reading. I just kind of go in a little Fortress of Solitude. But I snarkily made a comment on Twitter about Fantastic Four number 571, making fun of a typo I found. And I said, oh, you came so close with that damn typo. And I got through the rest of my books. I'm like, you know, not one single book in my stack had me nearly as impressed and excited as Fantastic Four number 571. And so it ended up being the pick of the week. Jonathan Hickman is the writer. Dale Eaglesham is the artist. And we've known about Hickman and Eaglesham taking on Fantastic Four since February?
New York.
February this year. And Hickman did that little miniseries, which was really good, but it wasn't really the full potential, you know, with Eaglesham on board. And a couple times over the past 6 months, I've kind of forgot they were doing it. Then
it was also tied into the Secret Invasion directly, so it wasn't like he could tell his own story.
Exactly. So, but now this is the second issue. It feels like the first issue just came out. You know, so they appear to be running on time, at least two issues in. And, you know, and I talked a lot about it in my review, but the thing is, like, I was very vocal this year criticizing Fantastic Four, stating that, you know, after Miller and Hitch's pretty much, you know, I don't want to say it's a failed run. It was good, but non-event run. It didn't matter. It didn't spark
the audience's excitement for
exactly
the way they were hoping.
Exactly. So after that, I said, you know, I think Fantastic Four's time might be up. I mean, don't get me wrong. Marvel, this will be the last comic book Marvel publishes. It was the first one. It will be the last. They will never cancel it. We will always, as long as Marvel's around, we will have a Fantastic Four book. Who knows?
That's a leap.
As of about a month ago, that was true. But, you know, who knows? If Roy Disney likes it, then maybe it'll stick around. Is he still involved in Disney? No.
Cryogenically frozen Walt gives it the heads up.
Say exactly. Bob Iger.
Bob Iger. But I thought that maybe, you know, maybe it's not going to connect with our, you know, modern sensibilities. Maybe the idea has been, you know, kind of played out. And, you know, a big part of it is that every creative team that comes onto it always makes some reference to Kirby and Lee and their run on it and how the Fantastic Four is about a family but cosmic problems and all these sort of things. I feel as if everybody's always living in the shadow of Stan and Jack, which is a hard shadow to get out of. But nobody has really moved the Fantastic Four forward into modern times. Byrne maybe did it a little, maybe inched it a little in the 80s when he was on it. Wade and McDuffie came closest, I think, in this decade working on it and with great runs. But two issues in, and I knew Hickman was going to be good for this. Like, I knew, like, we said it. Hickman is a writer. If you read Nightly News, if you read Pax Romana, he's a writer with big ideas, and he's a smart guy. I always feel so stupid after I finish reading one of his comics.
And we made him.
Yeah. We did.
It's true.
I knew he'd be perfect for it as long as he didn't get sucked into the same traps that everyone else does. I didn't realize it would take two issues before he kind of came into his own on it. But this issue blew me away. It picks up where last issue left off. His first issue, 570, ended with the revelation that Reed stumbled upon this kind of place in between all the alternate universes of the Marvel universe, where there's all these incarnations of Reed Richards's, and they form the Council, or the Council of Reeds, as I like to call them. And essentially, it's just every – from the Alan Moore concept of the multiverse in Marvel, for every Earth, there is a Reed Richards, and they are all gathering and working on ways to make the multiverse a better place.
Wait. Do you mean that more writers are building off of what Alan Moore did?
Yeah, amazing, isn't it? Anyway, so this issue picks up, and I got to admit, the first three pages of this book – were not only great and visually beautiful by Eaglesham, but ballsy as hell, because Galactus has become kind of like – we joked about how like the Punisher is like the last page oh shit moment for like the street level characters. And for the cosmic books, Galactus is like this big baddie that they're going to bring in to have impact. You know, I remember reading Silver Surfer, and every time Galactus showed up, it's like, oh, Nova did it a couple of months ago, and oh, Galactus is there. You know, and it's the kind of thing where, you know, you're never going to recreate what Stan and Jack did with that first Galactus story. Nobody ever will. So Hickman just gets it out of the way in the first three pages, and he's got all these Reeds from alternate universes fighting the Galactus of 2012. And it's only three pages, but he dealt with Galactus. It's done. Move on to do something new. And this issue focuses as Reed travels with the three leader Reeds, the three Reeds that are in charge, first with the Reed in the business suit. Who I kind of like. He's kind of a classy Reed. As they discover that he's terraformed a planet to solve hunger, and this is how Reed Richards can do good for the universe. And then he goes on to kind of hang out with the medieval Reed,
the Jeff Bridges Reed
with the bald Reed with the big beard.
Well, that's he's got a little doom in him.
We find out that he's got a little doom in him,
which is the best line I read maybe all week.
We've got a little doom in him, and he shows him how they deal with evil and how ultimately doom in every alternate universe, doom is the problem, and he won't quit. And so it's their job to rail him in and take him down to the hole. And
basically lobotomize him.
They lobotomize doom.
Yep. So and then finally he meets up with Starfleet Reed, who is in some sort of upper dimensional space that allows them to solve cosmic problems, like
performing surgery on the universe.
Exactly. Basically. Like saving a star from going supernova and saving billions of people and that sort of thing. Basically showing them the ultimate potential of what Reed Richards can do, and they invite him to join them. And ultimately, after a flashback of remembering Reed talking to his father and talking about his potential and what he could do to help people, Reed accepts. And just as he accepts, the council gets broken into by the Celestials, which it doesn't get much bigger than the Celestials. Nope.
It's funny because the thing that really hooked me on this one was that sort of here's the good part,
yep,
here's the bad part, you know, what do you think? And yep. And when you look at those were Grant Morrison level,
yep,
ideas. The surgery on the universe.
He loves Grant Morrison. He's a big Morrison.
Yeah, and it shows. It totally
clearly
shows,
and in a very good way. Like I was duly impressed by that imagination, and then also that, just sort of that balance of it. You know that,
yeah,
the way they did that. So.
And then I'd be remiss if I didn't mention how in the beginning of the issue, after Galactus, there's a little interlude of the Fantastic Four family at breakfast with some effortless dialogue.
That was my favorite scene of the book.
It was great. It was just a glimpse. It was only a couple pages, but you've got, you know, Reed and Sue dealing with Franklin and his birthday party, and Johnny Storm being the Human Torch.
Jealous of Spider-Man because Franklin wants Spider-Man at the party, and that was the thing that was really stand out about the miniseries was the doing the family that dynamics, and he does that really well. Next to the big science ideas, he's got the great family dynamics. So he's the perfect guy because that's what you need to do for Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
They both have to make sense. They both have to work.
Yeah, and the whole thing is just great. And Eaglesham's – this is the best work I've ever seen from Eaglesham. Paul Mounce is coloring off of his pencils, so it's a lot tighter of a line than we've seen previously. And he's referencing Kirby in his renderings of the characters. I mean, they've got a little Kirby face to them, but he's also making them their own. He's not aping Kirby style. Kirby style, he's I think showing reverence to it. So I don't know. I hope that this can prove me wrong. Everybody start reading this. You know, I would love to see Fantastic Four be a top tier book again, and this team do it.
Well, hopefully. So, I don't. I mean, I think it's a great book, but I don't. I mean, I think it's going to be great in certain circles.
Yeah.
And people who, but I mean, ultimately, I don't think it's going to move the needle any more than the Miller Hitch books will.
Yeah.
I just think that's just the lot of the Fantastic Four.
Right. And I could, you know, that was my original hypothesis, but the Marvel fan in me, you know, like I want to be proven wrong, I guess.
Oh, I think this, I'd love it to be. I mean, I think even last issue was my pick of the week. I think we all picked this book, didn't we?
Yeah.
Everybody. I mean, like all three of us, I know that Paul did, the writer from our site, and it was a big, people liked
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Big deal. So
it's great. I actually read this book last.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of books to choose from. But by the time I got to it, I thought, well, I wasn't even thinking it would be an option. But I finished. I was like, wow, that was fantastic.
Yeah. It was the second book I read, and the first book I read actually was Amazing Spider-Man. Amazing Spider-Man number 606, partially because it had the Black Cat on the cover, but it also had Joe Kelly back as writing. Not that Van Lente wasn't good. But man, was the writing in this issue like sharp.
It was pretty friggin' classic.
Yeah, it was really, really good. Combined with, I think this was the best work McCone's done on Spider-Man yet.
There was some really
good layouts, really good stuff. Really, like, it was just such a strong issue, and I just can't believe how strong Amazing Spider-Man is right now. Like, I don't think it's been this strong of a title in 20 years.
Yeah,
no, not since McFarlane.
Yeah, exactly. So,
really? Not yeah. Farland Michelini, I think.
Yeah. But I love the use of the spider emblem as panels. You know, the shape of the spider on his back, you know, the spider on Spider-Man's yes. back. Yeah. That was great, and the stories, I mean, like the sitcom-esque opening scene with Peter and his roommate and the crazy blonde and then MJ, and then throw Black Cat into the mix. And this is like, that's what makes Peter Parker so good, is like juggling.
Yeah, I love the escalating tension of it.
Yeah.
Just that, you know, as we, you know, he's talking to Michelle and then Nora shows up and then MJ shows up, and it's just like, it can't get any worse. That's Spider-Man. When it can't get any worse, it gets worse.
Yep.
What was also really nice about the Black Cat scenes is that you saw how they were playing out, and it was a little along the lines of, he wasn't fighting crime with her. He didn't really know what to do, so he was kind of just following her around.
Yeah.
Instead of, you know, theoretically, he should, like, well, I should be stopping her from doing this thing, but he's so taken aback, or nonplussed, if you will, that he... that he like kind of just keeps following her around and just like asking her questions and stuff, and he's letting her go through with the whole burglary and doesn't do anything.
And well, that's, of course, the power of boobs.
And then of course shit goes to hell.
Well, it's you know, he always had a complex relationship with Black Cat, and he's always had trouble stopping her from committing crimes in the same way that Batman is with Catwoman, and it makes their relationship so much more complex than any other girl he's dated. Mm-hmm. There's a whole new layer to that, and it's a fun one. And it's a good. Kelly's great with this, with the romantic banter.
Well, there's an interesting fact to the creative team on this. You know, Kelly's doing great with the writing and the banter and the dialogue. McCone might be the best work, but a little touch of magic, Mr. Andy Lanning doing inks.
True enough,
we're gold on every book he touches.
He's a fantastic inker. We talk about him all the time as a storyteller, and he's got a very nice line, if I might say so.
And he really made McCone's pencil sing. I mean, really. So, it was great stuff. It was so, so good. So,
yeah.
So, I like comics that don't move. This is a thing. It's a preference that I have. A couple of weeks ago, a month ago, whatever, you may have heard that Spider-Woman number one was released as a motion comic on iTunes, and I decided I didn't really want anything to do with it because I heard it was going to be a real comic, and I thought that's what I want, and I'm very happy that this is how I read it.
Well, now, and here's the problem. Connor, did you watch the motion comic? Or
no, I have no interest in motion comics.
Okay. Now, here's the thing, is that because I'm a little more adventurous than the two of you, I've signed up to the motion comic, I subscribe to it, I'm getting every issue, and it's Maleev's art in the motion comic. It's all Maleev's art. Everything in this comic book is in the motion comic. The problem is the motion comic came out, what, like a month ago, 3 weeks ago? Mm-hmm. And it completely ruined my experience reading this book because I felt like I've read this already.
Well, you did read it already.
Yeah, I know. And so this was beautiful. like the art was amazing. Maliv is fantastic. But it was just like, oh, it feels like a repeat. So well,
this was that way. The thing is, I wanted to read the book. Yeah. Like the fact that, I mean, if the other one was original story and I knew it wasn't going to come out in a book or something, I might have tried it just out of curiosity. But the fact that I was going to get to see Maliv's work in comic book form again, I didn't want to blow that, I suppose. Yeah. And I'm very glad for it. Actually, I really like this. I think that because they've been teasing that Spider-Woman story forever.
And, well, it's been since they did Daredevil, which
right.
was...
Yeah. This isn't even a story they've been teasing. No, he changed but, it after it happened. Yeah,
but so. If you... like, I guess it was... Jesus, it's been so long now. I guess a lot of New Avengers early on, she was featured a lot. And I really, really liked the way that Bendis played her. Yeah. And I thought this was a fun way to go. It was a little... like, reminded me of Alias, but without being quite as good as Alias, I guess. You know, the woman's down in the dumps. She's got a... But it was fun. It was good. It's in no way... it was a good book.
It was good, but it was a bit old. It felt old. Like, yeah. it's an old characterization of Spider-Woman mm-hmm. from back during Secret Invasion time. It's back to the Skrulls, which yeah. we put in our rearview mirror, thank God, and now they're back.
I'll give you that. I definitely felt that a little bit.
Did you like the interview?
It's like a story that takes place like 3 years ago, basically, which is fine. It was good. I love the art, and he does a great Spider-Woman, but it did have that veneer of feeling like I'm back in time, which mm-hmm. wasn't a good feeling.
The little origin recap utilizing the Luna Brothers art and then the Secret Invasion art I thought was interesting, yeah. an interesting choice, like as opposed to recreating it. You know, Maliv kind of pulls it in. Just to give you guys a detail you might have missed by not by reading this or watching it in Motion Comic, Spider-Woman has a British accent. So
she's British.
Go. which I thought was interesting because at one point, one of the balloons, she refers to her mother as Mum. M-U-M.
Yeah, I think
everybody forgot about that detail until the Motion Comic came out again. And exactly, everybody yeah. looked on Wikipedia to remember she was born in England.
And then they said that Wikipedia was wrong.
I bet the people, in the UK didn't forget about that. They knew it all along. She's one of ours, mate.
It's oh, the worst English accent you've ever done.
It really was. Yeah,
I decided not to bother.
Uh huh.
Mm. Yeah, fair enough.
So yeah, it was good, but it was kind of ruined for me, and now I'm just like, oh shit! I think I want to read the issues before I watch the episodes. So
have you watched the first three? The first three are out?
I have not watched the third. I watched the second.
So you just couldn't wait to get your hands on that one, huh?
Well, I downloaded it. Whenever I download something like podcasts or something like that, you get that little number and it just stares at you, and I just feel so I got to watch it and just get it over with.
Yeah,
so.
Well, but
according to
comics,
our writer Jim, yeah, we got
you get comics, you read them that night.
Yeah, I do.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
According to our writer Jim, there are pages in the comic that aren't in the Motion Comic.
Yeah, I did notice that. Yeah, so the comic was had a little more padding. So, but you know, editing, you know, so. All right, so that's a whole lot of Marvel. Let's check in across the street with DC, and that was really like a radio kind of voice there.
technically, they're about 20 blocks north.
I'm loving Blackest Night Superman, and I'm surprised that I am. We talked about it when it came out, but this is like a horror book.
It's yeah. great. It's really it's one of the really better Blackest good. Night tie. A lot of them have been pretty good, but I think that one of the things that's putting this one over the top is that Eddie Barrows can put together one hell of a big page, and yeah. you know, Robinson is letting him do it, I guess. When Rucka started off on Action, Eddie Barrows was the artist, and I was like, who is this guy?
Yeah.
And it's just more of the same here, real good.
Well, I love
they have the best use of the spectrum.
Yes.
Yes.
So as you say, I love the use of the spectrum. I absolutely this is the standout of all the add-ons to Blackest Night to use that so well.
I love that Superman is accompanies all the at all times, all of the emotions, and yeah. you get a little of that in Supergirl as well, or is it Superboy? Supergirl, or is it my crazy? Superboy.
It will change at times, yeah. But
also Supergirl, also Psycho Pirate's like the perfect
dude. Zombie. I was gonna say Connor's like, do you know why I love this? Because
Psycho Pirate,
I love Psycho Pirate. He's the best.
When you're dealing with a spectrum that deals with emotion, he's the perfect villain. And it's surprising. I mean, people talk about this on iFanboy. It's surprising that he wasn't being used in the main book because he could be like the most powerful one. Mm-hmm. But it, altogether, it's a great package. It is a horror book, totally.
And the Black Lantern costume removes the horrible offensive costume. So
of who?
of Psycho Pirate.
You're a jerk.
You lose that Harlequin thing. I don't know. Green
awesome.
And red together.
It's still there.
Well.
It's awesome. the same costume.
It
oh,
might
shit.
Be the colors. I don't know.
Oh well, no, they just got rid of the faces on his chest and replaced it with the Blackest Knight. But the checkerboard pattern is still there.
I'm just teasing you.
But
you're a jerk.
There's no mask, though. Did he didn't have the silver mask.
Isn't he holding it? No.
Is he holding it?
Anyway. He takes it off in the beginning. That's how he uses his power. But
I love Psycho Pirate. He's the best.
It's a really great mini. This is a really strong mini.
Yeah, there it is. It's all broken in the beginning. Yeah.
You know, something should be said about the colors on this. The guy, Rod Rice, whatever his name is, maybe related to Ivan Rice, but he's killing on this. I mean, you look at some of the multicolor spectrum things, like when there's like a punch page where the characters are all the different colors at the same time, and really great stuff.
So good. But, you know, normally you guys are the ones loving Superman, but I could not love Superman Secret Origin number one, too. I read that.
Say that like, again. You could not love it?
I could not love Superman.
It wasn't not funny.
Jeff Johns, Gary Frank doing the Superman Secret Origin. It felt like I was reading Smallville. Well, like, literally, I wanted Johns to have written Smallville after reading this.
You know, the thing is that this is a completely rehashed story for the most part. It's something we've all seen, read, heard, watched many, many times before. So it's interesting that I could enjoy it as I did, I suppose.
It's funny because you once long ago picked Green Lantern Year One when that storyline was your pick of the week, and people complained about the rehashing, and you said rehashing didn't matter.
No, actually, I think my premise on that was that before, like prior to that, it was annoying me. I didn't want it all the time. Like, I think I had just read like the 90th origin of some Marvel character retold again. Like, I think I'd read like some Fantastic Four retelling, and I was just annoyed with the whole thing, so I tried to stay away from it. But in the case of Green Lantern, though, they hadn't done it for a really long time, or at least if they had, I hadn't seen it. And in this, I really feel like, you know, this was just taking all the elements that work best out of comics and the movies, even, and then Johns's updating. But there was a lot of stuff in there that didn't feel new. But at the same time, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really well done, and it was compelling. Which is it's an interesting thing.
Yeah, it just it felt right. And as much of the comics continuity or story or influence, whatever is there, there's a whole lot of Smallville in this.
There's a lot of Donner. There's a lot of Small. He takes everything. He takes what he needs to put this story together. And we know he's setting up the Superman timeline for the next however many years. I mean, it's interesting because this is the last vestige of old-time comics where they used to reboot but they used to retell the origin every 5 years because that's how often people, you know, they did studies that the turnover in comics was every 4 to 5 years. You'd stop reading them and people would come on, so they'd have to redo the origins. And for some reason, that element of it is still stuck around, mostly I think because people want to put their stamp on.
Yeah.
Now whatever. Let me ask this. Now, is the thing with the glasses, is that new?
I've never seen that before.
Because that is flipping brilliant.
Yeah.
For a couple of reasons. A,
it's like Cyclops. Almost.
Well, in the same, yeah, he totally is. In the way that he gets horny, so his eyes light up.
That's from Smallville.
Okay. Yeah, they did that. Okay, but besides that, having an explanation for the really dorky glasses, in the same way that he came up with an explanation for the bow tie for Barry Allen, I mean, that's...
Well, the glasses explanation is he, you know, he gets all around Lana, he gets all turned on, he shoots fire out of his eyes like he would. And
also, who would have thought that Pa Kent would be a backyard optician and be able to grind alien glass?
I mean, can't do anything.
They take the crystals from the ship, which they saw when he shot it with heat vision, didn't affect it. They make his glasses out of it so that if he shoots them out accidentally, he won't hit anyone. He sets the school on fire earlier, so that's a really neat device.
I mean, I'm just still blown away. I mean, like the getting horny in the fire came from Smallville. Having Clark wearing the red and blue constantly came from Smallville. Even that when Pete got his cast, Chloe signed the cast. Like, I really think that there's an acknowledgement of like people are coming into Superman from watching Smallville. So let's make and Pa Kent even look kind of like Bo Duke.
Mm-hmm. And he likes Smallville. He's a writer on Smallville occasionally. Yeah. So they're bringing that part in, and the whole idea of Lex living there is not a Smallville idea. It's a Silver Age Superman idea. Lex coming from Smallville.
The tornado saving Lana in the tornado. That was Smallville.
Jor-El's got a whole Marlon Brando thing going on, which is some of the Donner, and the whole feel is more Donner than Smallville.
All I gotta say is that at some point in this miniseries, Remy Zero better make an appearance.
But finally, the very last page of this, I thought was just some magnificent, just art, his character acting, the body language of Clark as he's coming down the stairs in his silly outfit, like That's
he's great. Not all proud with the shoulders out. He's all sort of hunched
yeah.
down, and
he feels like
he's
a dipshit because that's what he looks like. That's great. That was really well done.
Now I just
have stretches.
I'm just worried about the next issue because it says next Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes.
Yeah, I don't care at all.
Why would you?
Yeah.
The Legion story was the best story that Johns did in his run on Action Comics. He really has a good handle on it, and it's going to be one issue of him with meeting the Legion, which is going to be it's a classic part of the mythos.
Does he get a scorecard of all the characters?
Well, when he meets them, there's only three.
I know. I'm teasing. I'm going for the easy joke.
Mm. Listen, Johns will juggle 100 characters. Pff, whatever. That's no big deal. Justice. Let me tell you about the time of the Justice League, buddy.
Justice Society.
Whatever. Justice League 2. Whatever. Listen, I'll do a Justice League of 35 characters. You just tell me. I'll do that.
Robinson's doing that already.
Yeah. Geoforce has got to be somewhere. How about a giant gorilla? Put him in. Corey Walker returned to art duties on Invincible number 66. I think he did a little bit in an issue earlier, but he did the first six issues. He's one of the co-creators of Invincible. And over time, I've come to very much prefer Ryan Ottley over what was done in that original issue. However, he's come a long way, I think, since those first six issues of Invincible that he did, because he did the art on issue 66 and on the upcoming 67, and I was really impressed.
He did that mini with him at Marvel.
Yes, he did the Destroyer mini at Marvel. But it's just really cool to see him come in, and I thought this was a tour de force on the artwork on this one. There's a really great few pages where they sort of are showing all these dead Viltrumite bodies, and they back up a little more, and they back up a little more, and you see that all these corpses are forming the ring around a planet. And it was just a neat, it was like, that's good stuff right there. I guess I just really noticed artwork a lot. And basically, this is just, this is spending some time with Alan the Alien and Invincible's dad. And it was just fun. For some reason, whenever Alan the Alien shows up, it's a good time.
People love him.
I love him, and that's totally fine. Space.
You know, it's a good gig is to be him, Corey Walker, co-creator of Invincible, and not have to draw it anymore. Just get the checks.
Yeah, exactly.
From all those trade paperback sales.
That is pretty sweet.
So yeah. So before we move on, talk about the rest of the huge stack of comics in front of me. I want to tell everyone about Iverse Comics and thank them for sponsoring this episode. A lot of talk about comics on the iPhone these days. A lot of people talking about digital comics and getting your comics in a format for the iPhone or your mobile phone, like an Android, like I have. And Iverse has been leading the way. They've released a new version of their app, which is just 99 cents in the iTunes Music Store. If you're an iPod Touch or an iPhone user. It's only 99 cents, and with that, you get 30 free titles when you purchase it. So for a buck, you're getting the app as well as 30 free comics to check out.
And the app has been improved. If you tried Iverse before and you did sort of one comic at a time, everything was horizontal, and you sort of flipped through the panels. With this one, you can always flip the phone back up vertically, and you get to see the whole page, so you can always have context for the thing that you're looking at. It's just a nice little touch they added.
Yeah, it's really, really good. They've done a really good job on it, and they're taking feedback, and they're constantly improving it. And they got a big catalog of titles that include books from Image. They got the Archie comics. They've got a bunch of the Star Trek comics.
They got Atomic Robo. They have a lot of Robo.
Yeah, so very cool stuff. So make sure you head over to iversemedia.com/ifanboy, and you can find out all the details, how to download it. If you don't have an iPhone or iPod Touch, like I said, if you do have an Android phone, they have an app for that as well. So definitely, they're one of the big players when it comes to comics on the mobile phone. So check out Iverse Comics today.
They have Archie.
Archie.
So hey, Archie. That's why I downloaded it.
Archie. Woo. Mayhem. Anyway, speaking of Mayhem, Mad Men number 17 came out. And I hadn't talked about Mad Men in a while, Mike Allred.
Is that the one when Don had his baby?
No, it's not Mad Men. Mad Men.
Oh.
But I just wanted to quickly highlight this because this is the last issue of this run. Mike Allred did 17 issues in a row. They all pretty much came out on time. They all were pretty cohesive and made more sense than in the past. and this was a great kind of merging of all of his characters as Madman and his team, the Atomics, meet up with the band, the Gear, and they join forces. And Red Rocket 7 makes an appearance. And kind of if you're a fan of the Allred verse, this is a nice little end cap to this series. And I look forward to what he does in the future. feature, and there are some awesome pinups in the back by James Jean, Raphael Grandpa, Dave Johnson, Joe Quinones, Jim Rugg. Fabio Moon and Gabriel Ba. Great. I mean, if anything, get this book just for the pinups in the back. So
I want a verse.
Was the blackface scene uncomfortable?
Yes, it was. It was awkward.
Oh.
So Mad Men number 17. It was a great run. I really enjoyed it. I'm glad that that he pulled it off.
Hey, is he done now? There's no more?
Well, he's taking a break from it, and he's going to do some other stuff. And he said he is going to come back to the Mad Men verse, but he did this. He said what he wanted to say. He's going to move on, but he'll be back in a couple of years. Ooh.
You guys remember there was this comic book series that came out, and it was like huge big deal, and Mark Miller wrote it, and then it got really behind. Well, I guess I should be more specific. Was it Ultimates? Oh no, was it Civil War?
Kick-Ass?
Oh, can we keep? Oh, we can do this all night, people.
Yep.
That's what I'm saying. No, the final issue of Old Man Logan came out, and I'm gonna try to get this. Giant size Wolverine, Old Man Logan, number one.
Why even make it number one? And actually, if you look in the indicia, it's the actual title, as reported to the audit bureaus, is Wolverine, Old Man Logan, Giant Size, number one.
There he is.
So this is the final chapter to the what was heralded as to be epic Old Man Logan story.
This is my least favorite of the issues, I think.
Yeah, pretty much. I agree.
I thought there was a couple of things that... I enjoyed
it. It's beautiful.
I gave it a 4 stars, yep. But I enjoyed it less as I thought about it more at the end. My three problems with it were, number one, the whole thing is Wolverine confronts the Hulk family, kills all the people, and kills the Hulk. But one, the Hulk is just as invulnerable as Wolverine is.
Yep.
He heals just like Wolverine does, so at the end he wouldn't be dead. Number two, he eats Wolverine. Wolverine busts out of his stomach. That's how he kills him. But he would know that Wolverine is not going to...
Yeah, that was.
He's gonna reform in his stomach. You see, number three, I thought, to be honest with you, I thought the art was a little weak this time around. I thought it was really stiff in places.
Yeah,
and didn't really have that dynamic flow that McNiven's art usually has. I thought some of the panels were really good and nice, but some of the action sequences just came off as really stiff.
I'm gonna tell you, your problem with this issue is they killed Clint Barton a little while back.
Well,
that
I was gonna
right there was it.
I was gonna say, yeah, after Ronan died, it feels as if it got. It lost a little bit of its steam. I really think the story was the cross country journey and what was going on with Clint. And this was like this was like the last 20 minutes of the Lord of the Rings trilogy. You know what I mean?
Which you fell asleep at.
No, I fell asleep during the elves. They're in the elf part, not the last 20 minutes. But yeah, I feel like it ended with the Red Skull on the East Coast and everything like that. I didn't need this little end cap. Personally,
yeah.
Well, I get, like, the thing is, what was really nice, it's a compliment. This is in no way a bad comic book, but I think the other ones were so good that you do think about it. Plus, we had to wait a really long time for it. So, Hulk Wolverine is this was Marvel fanboy porn. So it makes sense that the last thing it would be the Hulk Wolverine fight because that's ultimate Marvel fanboy porn. Other things that was really nice, though, was a very nice sort of, it was a Western theme to the whole thing, and the end of it had a very, very Western cap. I thought that was
I well loved done. The end after, when he gets back to Logan's Ranch, buries his family, goes off in the sunset.
Yeah.
The art in that sequence was spectacular. I'm looking at it right now, and the pages with Wolverine and the duster and the hat and his face all in shadow was beautiful, mm-hmm. and I loved the pacing of it, and the coloring is nice. That's my favorite part of the book.
And yeah, I like the, you notice he could do more of these if he wanted to. They set that up. What are you going to do now? I don't have anything to do. I guess I'll just take care of the bad guys.
Yeah. I'll kill them all.
Yeah.
And while we're on the Wolverine topic, Wolverine First Class number 19 came out. And, number one of the Scotty Young covers that he's been doing, this is my favorite of them all.
It was a cover of the week on iFanboy.
Oh, it's fantastic. Wolverine and Kitty Pryde in space.
It was the winner. If I had ranked those, that's the best cover I saw this week. Easy.
It was fantastic. But Dennis Claro did the art, the interior art, and it was really good. Mm-hmm. It was really, really good. It had a much, he's got a little more of a cleaner look, photorealistic-y kind of look. And this First Class has always been a little cartoony, a little jokey. It was a nice change of pace. So I enjoyed it a lot. So good job.
This is now our third of 5 books.
Yeah, third of 5 X books, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so that was the first 2 X books. So now we're getting a little X-Men corner. And I'm sorry, a lot of X books came out this week. But quickly, Uncanny X-Men number 515 came out, and Greg Land's back. Who let him in? That's all I want to know. Who let him in? But that said, coming out of the Utopia thing, and now the, you know, Cyclops has set up the X-Men on Asteroid M, and Fraction's pulling this off. I really like the direction it took in this issue. It was really good. But what I thought was really funny was that there's all this hoopla about the face-off against the Avengers, and they quarantine themselves on Asteroid M, and they're this issue is Cyclops and the leaders, you know, and Storm and White Queen and Professor X and everybody trying to figure out how they're going to pull this off. And Cyclops goes into San Francisco to meet with the mayor, and the mayor yells at him. She's like, "Hello, do you want to talk to me before you do these sort of things?" And he's like, "Well, I don't know if we're safe." And she's like, "You're not wanted for anything. Why are you doing this?" Like, there was like a moment of realistic reaction to what the insanity of this crossover was. And I thought that was a nice little way to bring it around and frame it up.
Did the Beast quit?
No, but he's teetering. He's on the edge.
Is he on?
He should be an Avenger again. He should be an Avenger again.
Yeah,
be awesome.
But it ended with the return of Magneto, which is pretty cool. Dark X-Men: The Confession, number one. Why did this come out? Why even bother? Why didn't this come out 3 months ago? Moving on. Dark Reign: The List. Dark Reign: The List. X-Men number one. Focusing on Namor versus Norman. Could care less for the story, but Alan Davis is like torn. Yeah. So wait, good.
So is Namor official X-Men now?
Yeah, he's joined. Basically, the X-Men have given refuge to all the Atlanteans, and Namor's joined up. So Namor is an X-Man. So
he's not a mutant.
Yeah, he is. He's the first mutant.
Yeah, he is.
Yes, he's Marvel's first mutant.
So the Atlanteans are mutants?
No, Namor is a mutant of the mutant Atlantean.
He's got wings on his feet.
Now, we were talking about this in my shop today. When he flies, do the wings flap?
Yes.
I imagine.
I say yes, yeah.
Yeah, they do flap.
Yep.
I mean, okay. It's stupid for all. I mean, I don't have an aeronautics degree.
I'm not an engineer.
I don't claim to know how that works, but I'm just like surface area to weight ratios. I don't even know what I'm saying. Hey, new Avengers number 57 come out. I'm enjoying this. Is that weird?
No.
Okay, good. Phew.
It was good. My only issue was that I thought this is the weakest of the Immonen art yet.
I'm just really so happy that it's Stuart Immonen on there, and I'm like, the dude can do. He's just, it's so.
There was some stuff in this really that was really good, but there was some. And I'm gonna pull a Josh now. I had some storytelling issues. There was when they escaped in the Avengers plane. In one panel, Bucky or Cap Bucky is up front, like flying the plane, screaming at everybody to get in the air. And then three panels later, he's standing on the gangplank as Spider-Man jumps out going, no.
You know, like, you're right. And also, he threw his shield down and it bounced. But, like, you know, then he just kind of had it again. And there was like that escape, like the plane comes down in the middle of everything. And did all the villains just stand around?
Yeah, exactly.
Somebody
yep.
do something while they take the time to lift their fallen friends and pull them into the plane.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Is any of these 97 supervillains standing around have anything to do about this? Listen, I don't know.
It's like in the movie when the one guy fights the group, but he fights them one at a time.
I got the God of War.
They don't beat on him in a circle.
Yeah. But that's,
also, Night Nurse got like super hot.
No, Night Nurse. What? Why did they ruin Night Nurse?
It's true. She was.
So much better when she was like the 50s nurse. Yep.
She was kind of normal looking, normal size. Now she's like Playboy bunny proportions.
They walked into her clinic and somebody says, "No, Ms. Marvel says, are you the Night Nurse?" And I went, "No, she's not." But I got to admit, when Mockingbird landed the plane instead of Avengers Assemble, that was pretty cool.
I like the Luke Cage storyline because they've got to pay off that thing that they set up earlier from that other really good single issue when he told Norman to fuck off, basically.
Yeah, exactly. So good stuff. And finally, we mourn as Wednesday Comics number 12 came out, ended the experiment of one-page newspaper comics by DC Comics. And I think we were better off for having this experience.
Mourn Wednesday Comics. Rejoice in what they brought us all. We remember Wednesday Comics.
It was fantastic. And Kershaw,
I don't know the rank anymore of that.
Kershaw's the Flash wins overall, I think. So,
I wouldn't say that.
What was better?
Well, many of them.
Yeah. I
thought Congress. Kershaw's the Flash veered off too in close to Wonder Woman territory at times, where it got too small. There was too much dialogue. I noticed.
I could see that. Yeah.
Word balloons got really small and type got really small at some points. Yeah. But I saw a Dan DiDio interview and they asked him about more Wednesday comics. He's like, maybe. Like, you know, not too.
Let me worry about having a job.
I'm not even sure the name of my company.
I don't know why I talk with a high voice now.
Seriously, is there a gas leak in here? What's going on? Is that you?
He does it to mock Mickey Mouse comic.
How you doing? Oh, that's good times.
Anyway, we'd like to thank our sponsors. We want to thank Audible.com. Audible is the place for audiobook. You can download them to your iPod or any of the devices you may have. There are many, many devices available, and listen to them. They've got over 60,000 titles across every genre of book you can imagine, from fiction and nonfiction. You can go to audiblepodcast.com/ifanboy to sign up and get a free audiobook and a 14-day trial. The Audible pick that I chose this week is Blood and Thunder, an epic of the American West by Hampton Sides. I actually just read this physical book, but this is a 21-hour full rereading of it, and it's the story of Kit Carson and the expansion of the American West before and throughout the Civil War. And if you like U.S. history, this is something that I don't think we see a lot of, and I learned a ton about the expansion and the Indian Wars and the Mexican Wars, and it was very, very compelling. So that's a good.
Well, there are a lot of books about that.
I know, but this is a good one. I can confirm it.
All right. So, a lot of thank you, Audible, for sponsoring us. Go to audiblepodcast.com/ifanboy. So there were. I know. I'm just saying it again, reiterating the message, call to action. So a lot of comic books came out this week. You can go to ifanboy.com/comics. They're all listed there. You can do your pull list. You can rate and review them. I want to highlight a couple of reviews this week. And our first review comes from Changing Shades, who wrote a review of Underground number 1 from Image Comics, with story 4 out of 5 and the art 4 out of 5. And this was written by Jeff Parker and drawn by Steve Lieber of Whiteout fame. And at the time of recording, nobody made it their pick of the week. And Changing Shade says, well, this is a very unique book. It seemed to rely on the characters more than setting up the story. I mean, there was a cave plot, but it seemed more interested in how the Rangers interacted with the townspeople or how the Indian business guy was a glorified car salesman. And I have to say, I really liked that. All the people introduced here seemed archetypes instead of cliche. The art was really good, too. I like how townsfolk look. Liked how the townsfolk look, and the way the caves look did a good job of making it feel different. I don't know if Donald ever finished and produced his caving comic, but I remember having the same feel down in the caves. I really am straining to think of something I didn't like about this issue, and I'll be damned if I can think of one. The only reason this book won't sell 100,000 copies is because people aren't willing to try something different. Did either of you pick this up? Or
I did. This was my favorite thing that Jeff Parker's ever written.
Yeah.
You know what? I was really looking forward to this. His mainstream work is not all that often resonated with me, but this is kind of like – this is my thing. When you're taking a story that is basically not – as far as we know, it's not based in fantasy or anything. It seems to be a real-life story, and it's about politics, and there's a relationship going on, and it's set in a place in America that I don't know as much about. Seems to me – I forget where it is. They're in Tennessee.
It's like Kentucky or something like that.
And, you know, like the there's all these different forces in the little town, and it's just a little, you know, small town, new American sort of fable of the kind of things that we deal with now, and environmentalism and great stuff. Really good.
I just thought there was a lot of setup.
It's a first issue.
Yeah, I know. And I'm sure the second issue will move it a little forward. But I like Lieber. Lieber color work, you know, which I haven't seen a lot of. I've seen a lot of his black and white work. I dug it. I liked it. I'm gonna read this whole series in issues. I know, Connor, you'll probably wait for the trade. So,
yes.
All right, cool. On to our next book, which I bet you were afraid we weren't going to talk about it.
Jeff R. wrote about Detective Comics 857. He gave a story a 4 out of 5, and the art a 4 out of 5.
What?
And the pick of the week percentage was 3.9% of all the iFanboy users. And Jeff R. says, this issue marks the end of the Elegy story, which began this relaunch of Batwoman. The art couldn't be more gorgeous.
Apparently it could.
It could. It could be one more, actually. Between the intricate layouts, which showcase the duality of Kate and Alice, as shown on pages 1 and 18 through 19, and the eye-popping colors that Dave Stewart is laying down, we comic book readers are getting a clinic on how to tell a story visually. I remember reading pages 18 and 19. My eyes, as they naturally do, went straight to the dialogue. Slowly, my peripheral vision began nagging at me. What's with Batwoman posing in the middle of the page? I thought to myself, drawing the page away from me caused the entire layout to come into view, and it took my breath away. It's almost too bad that J.H. Williams III is doing his art chores in this book because he's so brilliant that he's overshadowing Greg Rucka's very fine script.
How good – what does this guy have to do to get a 5 out of 5?
My God.
I am double-checking this because that was all hyperbole, but you guys continue to talk.
Well, this is the best issue since the first issue.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, and it comes close to maybe beating the first issue, but I don't think it did. But this is totally a 5 out of 5 book, both for the writing and the art. It was just amazing. Like that first page with the, you know, with the faces and the eyes.
Oh, I'm sorry, Jeff. He gave it a 5 out of 5.
Oh, thank God.
There's your typo.
It wasn't my typo. That was Connor's. Connor did these.
You know what though? Good joke. Thank you.
Yeah, it was a good joke.
The layout, the layouts. I love layout. I'm a design nerd, and the layouts on this every issue are just so amazing.
I thought the art was. I mean, it's been great the whole time. I thought it was really, really a notch above what he's done already.
I wonder. I really wish we. And next time we talk to Rucka, we should find out. But I really wish how many of these issues were done years ago and then shelved, and then when did he pick back up? Because I want to see where if there's a difference or a drop off or a change or something like that. You know. But that page 18, 19 with the yin and the yang kind of circle layout is just amazing. So,
and I also felt like I had a better handle on the story in this issue. If there's one complaint about the book, it's been that I've been on holding on to them with my fingertips to the story.
Yeah.
Whereas in this issue, I felt like I really had a good handle on what's going on. Not only that, I thought the backup was great too. And I thought the backup's getting more and more intriguing. This one, the backup here felt very much like Queen and Country.
Yeah.
Which I know we keep saying with Rucka, but this is very much, there's a lot of like espionage work going on and sort of the one woman infiltration, and it felt very much like that.
Well, I've been reading Gotham Central, so now when I, you know, because I'm fresh with it, to see a Renee Montoya story, like I'm thinking of it in those contexts and seeing how far she's come, and I find it very interesting.
Yeah. Good
stuff. You know, my favorite page was the last Batwoman page where it goes from black and white, grayscale, less grayscale to full black and white.
Like, that was cool.
The story sort of fading out. That was really nice. Cool. It was brilliant. It almost makes every other book look horrible in comparison.
Yeah, totally. So,
if you like that kind of thing.
So many books this week. So many. Such a good week.
I actually had a lightish week.
Really?
To be honest with you. Yeah.
I had 20.
I didn't buy 45 X-Men books. That's the problem.
That's my problem. I had 20 books. So.
Yeah. Sorry. So, and if you had all these books and you want to spend less for them, you can go to Discount Comic Book Service. They've got monthly special up to 75% off. 40% off all their major publishers, and they got a flat rate shipping of $5.95 on all U.S. orders, which you know is important because books are heavy. You can buy anything that's listed in previews, and they got over 5,400 trade paperbacks in stock. You can track your orders online at discountcomicbookservice.com. That's where you go to get your cheap monthly issues.
Mayhem!
Sweet.
What?
Yeah.
So we're going to be we have so many books. We're running a little short on time, so we're going to skip the emails. But make sure you write in and email us at contact@ifanboy.com with your questions. And you can always check out every Friday on ifanboy.com. We have our letter column where we answer your questions there as well. So write in contact@ifanboy.com. Everybody's doing it. Voicemail is back, and you all called in, and that's great. And we're gonna tee off this little voicemail segment with a question following up on Strange Tales number one.
Hey, this is Josh. I just picked up your recommendation for Strange Tales, the Marvel thing, and I was hoping you guys could do something, you know, point me in a direction of indie. I mean, you've touched upon it, but I really want something that's, you know, like, give me an artist that's kind of fringe, you know, like, I want Marvel DC, but something that's in that vein, but a little more indie. I want to start getting my feet wet with the indie. That'd be great. Thanks, guys.
John, come on. Indie comic.
Come on.
Indie comic. Josh. Wait, that's your name. Josh. Holy shit.
Josh, yeah.
I'm talking to myself. Indie comics are not some strange entity. They're stories like any other. And you could, I'm sorry, but you can read comics that don't have anything to do with Marvel and DC, and you're going to be just fine. You watch TV shows, I assume, about all sorts. You don't
movies,
don't
anything
say,
like that.
I want to step outside of my normal dining patterns and then go to Denny's and order the Southwest chicken salad. It's not. Come on, we've done hundreds of shows and showcase all sorts of books from all over the place, and there's plenty of stuff.
Yeah, go outs. I mean, the thing is, Marvel and DC is great. We talked, the majority of the stuff we talked about here in the audio show is Marvel and DC. But, you know, there's so many great indie books that we read. We talk a lot about them on the video show. But, like, and use Strange Tales as your guide. Yeah, there is a list of creators, and go out and find their work. Go find Jason's work and see how crazy awesome it is.
Paul Pope's work. That's kind of, yeah. That's even kind of strange. I'll give you that.
Yeah, and DC's reprinted a lot of Pope's work, which you can get now. Strange Tales number 2 or 3, I think, is coming out. Number 2 is coming out, I think, has the Matt Kent Black Widow story, which I saw the original art at Windy City Comic-Con this past weekend. It's amazing. Read that, and then go buy Super Spy.
Yes.
Like, seriously. Like,
Okay, though, if you want a place to go that doesn't feel that far out of your wheelhouse – I'm telling you, get out of Marvel and DC for this, though. So go get Jeff Lemire's Essex County trilogy.
Yes.
Do that. You're gonna like that, and then check out Poison.
Jeff Lemire hinted to us in San Diego that he might be doing superhero work soon. So, you know, so that lays the groundwork. But yes, Box Office Poison, awesome.
Listen, I got a burger.
I mean, if you want to be really comfortable, you go to Boom and you get the, you know, Irredeemable, and so you're sort of stepping a toe out into the water Marvel DC.
Go to Image.
And Invincible and Walking Dead and
pick up Underground number 1, just came out this week. Try something different, you know.
Well, I went to the McDonald's, I got the French vanilla roast.
This Ocuccino. So so take a chance. It's okay. It'll be all right.
It's not scary out there.
No, it's not. It's all nice. Three of us enjoy indie comics in much different realms, much different kind of creators, and we all get something different out of it, and you can too.
The water's fine. Dive.
So
I like indie books like Avengers Initiative. It's a good indie book.
So I don't know why we're giving the ignorant comic fan a southern accent. That's kind of bad.
Did you point it out?
Yeah, you did. Yeah, no, we all did.
I did it. It was an imbecile voice, but it wasn't necessarily southern.
All right. Call and leave us a voicemail. 1-888-FANBOYS. This is 1-888-326-2697.
We're going to get shit for this. We're trying to put on an entertaining show.
Yes, okay. We are.
We love you. I love, your name is Josh. I love you.
We haven't made fun of Canada in years. Remember, we used to do it all the time.
They had it.
Yeah,
coming.
We did. Yeah, they did. They did have it coming. They've been fairly quiet with their healthcare. Recently,
we all got it coming, kid.
All right, so we mentioned that this podcast is brought to you by iFanboy listeners like you, and you, if you enjoy iFanboy, there are many ways you can help out iFanboy to kind of keep us going. We love doing the show for you. We love not charging you for it. We love doing iFanboy.com. We love doing the video show when it comes back. So you might be sitting there going, how can I help out? Well, let me just break down simply how you can help us out. Go to iFanboy.com and click on the banners. You know, there are banners from Amazon, from our sponsors that pay to put banners on iFanboy.com. Click those. It's simple, easy. If you're on the site for 10 minutes, click a banner. That's all, just once. You know, every little bit helps. Go to iFanboy.com/Amazon. There you can buy anything from Amazon, and it helps us in the process. You can buy video games, DVDs, comic books. Look at that. Comic books, graphic novels at Amazon. It helps.
Anything. Anything.
Yeah, it doesn't cost you anything. Yes, everything. Exactly. Prophylactics. They got it all.
They got the edible panties.
Yep, they do.
They have the massage oil, too.
They got into big sizes.
Wow.
Massage oil.
Big
candles
sizes. What is wrong with you? Hey,
go ahead. Look up the edible panties and check the sizes. I bet they got them in the big sizes.
Oh, God. No, anyway.
Listen, maybe you're hungry. They're edible. It's not, I don't know why it's got to be disgusting. Cherry
it's like
is
two
a little,
puppy stuff back there.
Cherry is a little too sweet, just so you know. You want to
anyway. Really, if you really do want to help us and keep iFanboy, keep the lights on, the two best things you can do is go to iFanboy.com/store. That's where you can find our t-shirts that we're selling. The Power Responsibility shirt is still available, the possibly Spider-Man influenced shirt, as well as the Herm shirt is on pre-order, and the pre-order is coming to an end, and it's going to be available for purchase come October. So go there, purchase those. They're $15, and they help support iFanboy, and you get a badass t-shirt in the process. And finally, you can become an iFanboy member. For $4 a month or $42 a year, you get an iFanboy prize pack, which got a bunch of buttons and stickers and a random comic book from our collection. And if you got a little more money, you can sign up for the $10 a month or $100 a year, where you get the whole prize pack with the buttons and the stickers and the comic book, plus the iFanboy members t-shirt. And iFanboy members are eligible for giveaways. Last week, we gave away a huge Top Shelf – that was last week, right?
Yes. Yeah.
A huge Top Shelf prize pack.
Package, yeah.
Yeah, we've got another. We've got a big, big, big one coming up in October that you want to become a member for and be eligible for. So definitely sign up to become a member today. And, you know, we really appreciate and want to thank everybody who's done any one of the things that I just talked about. You are the people who we're doing it for, and we can't do it without you. And so we just want to thank you.
You are not the ones who are the ball lickers.
You are not the ones who are the ball lickers. But seriously, you're our favorite people in the world. We just want to thank you for helping us out.
A quick note on the members packages. We ran out of buttons.
Yep.
So we had to reorder more buttons. So if you've become a member in the last month or so, you probably are wondering, where's my members package? Well, as soon as you get more buttons and stuff in, we'll be sending them out again. So hold tight.
Yep. Our buttons are handmade by children in Guatemala, so they say it.
Well, they've got little fingers, and the buttons are little, so it requires delicate work.
And the thing is, those pins take them out left and right, so they're constantly replacing the stock. How many members do you think that I've lost for us this episode alone? Go ahead. And will they be more offended with that or with the fact that Connor didn't love Old Man Logan? I don't know, and it could go either way. I think.
The thing is, when the kids cut their fingers in the buttons, there's a lot of blood poisoning that goes on. Mm-hmm. So constantly having to traffic in more kids.
You got
to
catch that early.
They live in filth, too. I mean, let's be honest.
Right. Filth. The filth gets in there, rickets and stuff. I don't even know what rickets are, but
they get the gout.
Sounds bad. Oh, get gout.
Yeah.
Clubfoot. Turf toe? No.
Oh, my God. Move on.
So we have a couple other podcasts to tell you about from this week.
This Week in
if
Rickets.
If you look back on the... This Week in Rickets is our new show.
Sure.
We talk about medical issues. And really, it was a shocker, that one.
I learned a lot of things. Medical advice show. Completely without merit.
We could take voicemails and answer questions.
Oh, you want to drink a tincture of black tea and brown sugar?
Laudanum.
What you're going to do is you're going to go outside, you're going to make a poultice, okay? You get some mud, you get some berries, some sticks, you put that over the wound, let it sit there for about a week.
And sacrifice a squirrel.
My advice for everything will be leeches. Leeches. Anyways. In addition to This Week in Rickets, we've got a special edition podcast looking at Surrogates, the film based on the Top Shelf graphic novel, which you can find on the feed behind this show.
Very exciting.
As well as our Murmur podcast. You may recall 2 weeks ago we had the fall TV preview, and this week we have sort of a cornucopia of different topics with me and Josh and Jim and Paul, our writers from iFanboy.
And Murmur.
Right, but they would know them from iFanboy.
Right, yeah, I know, but they don't. Yeah, so. They write for both sites.
They do.
Fine.
So, yeah, so don't forget that the Surrogates podcast will be directly under this one, so go back to iTunes and download it manually.
Or you can just listen directly off of iFanboy.com if that's the choice. If that's your thing.
Make with the URL clicking to the iFanboy.com, read Ron's Pick of the Week podcast review. Or no, Pick of the Week review. I'm very tired. And all
I'm going to start reviewing the podcast.
Written, which would be meta. All sorts of conversations going up there. Here's one thing I do know. If you want people to talk, you want people to post on something, you put up a story about Alan Moore saying something, anything. Or digital comics. Either of those are going to work every single time. There's all sorts of conversation going on is what I'm trying to say. You can go to ifanboy.com/about to learn about who we are and find links to other ways to interact with us on the internet. Yes. Also, we have a video show you may have heard about. It's on break right now. It'll be back in a little while, but not too long.
I wonder what Alan Moore thinks of digital comics. That's an article.
Alan Moore has never even heard of a computer. Doesn't know.
You can email us at contact@fanboy.com. You can leave us a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697, with any questions or comments, concerns, discussion topics for this show, for the weekly letters column, for the video show when we do those shows, for all kinds of things.
I got books, call us. Three books, video show,
and
full.
And if you like iFanboy, go to iTunes and write a review. It's a great way to show your support and to help other people discover podcasts when they search for things and that sort of dealy. Or better yet, tell your friends and the other folks at your comic book store, or anybody who listens to podcasts or might be in the comics, that iFanboy exists. Tell them about the great website and podcast that we do, and spread the word that way. We really appreciate everybody. And I gotta say, I was in Chicago at Windy City at the Windy City Con last week, and there was a bunch of people in iFanboy member shirts, which was awesome. Luke Batt from New Zealand was there.
Jeez.
Crazy. It was, and a whole bunch of people came up to me and thanked me, you know, for what we do, and I thanked them for listening. And so, thank you if you came and said hi. But it's great to see iFanboy members and fans, you know, and iFan base members being at cons. It's really cool. So, yay!
From New Zealand.
You talking about this week in Ricketts?
New Zealand. Yeah, I guess he's in America traveling, and he's like, oh, I'll go to Chicago. So he,
oh, so he didn't
Chicago.
Come for that show.
No.
He
happy.
Came all the way out to meet Ron. Hello, Ron. I came here
awkward.
To meet you. Oh, hey.
It was really cool, and he was wearing his member shirt. It was awesome. So.
Badass. I wish we could just get
it. Did he start your conversation with a rundown of who was in the conversation?
No.
Present?
Yeah. Wrong. Anyway. So
I got it. Just so you know.
Feel that was for you.
Thank you.
All right. Well, it was a packed week. I'm exhausted. So until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
I got this boil. And I was wondering.
Leeches.
Bleed it.
Ugh. Bloodlettings.